Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Liberty Alliance. Again, as I mentioned a short few minutes ago, that we're going to be talking about our court case today. We're up at the appellate court in Albany, New York, and we were heard for our 2011 court case. But before we get started, I just want to spend 5 minutes talking a little bit about jurisdiction. And because everything we do is about jurisdiction when you go to court, you want to make sure that you have the jurisdiction. And by going into a common law court, it gives you the jurisdiction over everything else in that courtroom. And of course, you keep focusing in on your unalienable rights as opposed to your constitutional rights. You don't have constitutional rights, you have unalienable rights. And that's an important point in order to keep into the jurisdiction of common law. But anyway, there's a couple of facts that I just want to go through, 10 of them all together. 10 things that you were never taught in school, 10 things that most of the people in this, well, some of the people in this room might know because some of them listening in, following along, and listening to some of the programming and reading on our website, so you might know some of these things. Maybe you know most of them. But generally speaking, I know I never learned this in school, and only recently over the past few years have I come to understand these points, these facts. And if you want to be free, you have to understand jurisdiction, and you have to stand up for your jurisdiction. The Constitution is not going to stand up for you. Common law is not going to stand up for you. You have to stand up for yourself, and you have to exercise your rights. You have to demand your jurisdiction. And you have to make your argument. It's an uphill battle. That's just the way it is. But I promise you, if you study this, and there's not a lot to it, but if you study this and understand what jurisdiction is, maintain your jurisdiction, argue your jurisdiction, you will win. Just don't ever give up. But in any event, here's some of the facts that we never learned in school and they've robbed us from. They don't teach us this. They teach us opposite things. Fact number one, the United States is a trust, a corporation, also known as a nation. It was formed as a union of states, a.k.a. countries. Okay, so we are not the United States is not a country. It's a nation. It's a collection of countries, 50 countries in particular. Fact number two, a nation is not a country. Black's Law, 4th edition, 1891, defines nation as a people using the same customs, possessing historic continuity, and distinguished from other like groups by their racial origin and characteristics, and generally, but not necessarily, living under the same government and sovereignty. And that also was upheld in a ruling, Montefiore versus the U.S. So we are not a country as the United States. A lot of people think that that we are a country. The United States is a country. It is not. It's a nation. Fact number three, the Tenth Amendment is clear in that the states and the people are sovereign. Fact number four, the Declaration of Independence is clear in that governments are instituted and receive power from the consent of the people. Number five, in 1868, the 14th Amendment was created, the United States, which created the United States citizen, who are subject to the jurisdiction thereof and are given privileges or immunities. They're called civil rights. And that's where we go astray in court. They can take your rights or give you your rights or not, or take your rights away at any given time in court because you have civil rights. And that's where jurisdiction comes in. If you're coming in under the jurisdiction as a U.S. citizen, then you're subject to the rules and the laws, and you've received your rights from the government and not from God, and they're called civil rights. Fact number six, the people created the United States in 1788 by the authoring of the Constitution. Therefore, the United States is subject to the jurisdiction of the people. That's the position you always have to hold. That's the position you have to make, and that's the position you have to defend in court. If you stick to your guns and you follow through and persist, and we'll talk about some other points you could bring up that kind of brings the guns in on your end, then you will or can be successful. Fact number eight, the people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. That's a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Let me change it around. That's a New York Supreme Court ruling. So that's right here in New York State, a Supreme Court ruling, that the people are the king. This country is subject to you. They cannot legislate your behavior, although we've come to believe that they can, and therefore we obey all these statutes, when the statutes are really there to keep the behavior of the bureaucrats, the people working or elected in our government. Fact number nine, almost the same thing, people are supreme, not the state. And that's a U.S. Case law decision. Fact number 10, the state cannot diminish the rights of the people. So, and that's, again, another Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision. So if the people were not citizens before 1868, that's when they created the citizens, what were they before that, if you wasn't a citizen? Well, obviously you were one of the people. So whenever you go into a court, you want to make the point very clear that you're one of the people. You don't have to defend the fact. You don't have to talk about that you're not a citizen, you're not a U.S. You don't even ever bring that up. If you don't want to argue the point, don't bring it up. They certainly will not. But you do want to bring up the point that you're one of the people. And in the footnotes, you want to make it clear that you're the owners of this country, and you use their words. Some of these court cases we just read right here, we use their words to make the points in our footnotes on what the word people means, that we are the creator of the country, we the people, do establish and ordain. So how can the legislators legislate any law that controls your behavior? They simply cannot do it, but they are doing it because they dumbed us down, and we go to court and we pay their fines and we go to jail. Judge Bork said that 80% of the people in the jails today are there because they opened their mouth. They accepted their jurisdiction by pleading innocent or guilty. And when you go to court, unless they can produce someone who is an injured party or someone who was injured by you injuring their property, you know, hurting or destroying their property, if there's no injured party, you cannot be brought into court. They cannot have jurisdiction. And so that's the important thing. You must understand jurisdiction. And one of the powers that you might want to use, and we do write it into all our cases now, is U.S. Code 18 and U.S. Code 42. Whenever you bring those codes up and the judges become aware of those codes, believe me, they perk up, they open their ears, and they start listening attentively because they understand that that's a serious code. That's the code that puts them in jail. That's the code that you use to take away their house. That's the code that you bring them under control with. And once you start quoting them codes, also these codes require that if they become aware of a crime, they must act upon it. They cannot let it go by. If they let it go by, then they become part of that crime, and you can now hold them responsible. And so whenever we go into court, we make sure we bring those codes up, usually in the footnotes. I know today in our hearing we did bring it up in the hearing. We made note of that, and we did put them on notice. Okay, but with that, what I'm going to do is open the mics up. We'll talk a little bit about the case. I don't know if Gerard is here. Some people were up here at the court case. They might want to pipe in and, make mention of some of the things, some of the questions or anything. The mic is open, so I'm not going to unmute everyone, so if anybody wants to talk, ask a question, or make a comment, just click on, star 6 on your telephone. Star 6 will mute you or unmute you. So just click on star 6, and you can pick up the mic and ask your question or make your point. All right, well, while we're waiting for someone to participate, I guess I'll talk a little bit about the court case. We went up there. There was probably, I think it was 10 cases that were being heard this afternoon. I think we were number 9, or maybe there was 11. Gerard and I had 5 minutes apiece. I think we did relatively well. I think they're kind of stuck in a pickle. There's three ways the court can go. I think two of the three ways is going to be a very dangerous way for the court to go. And I think the third way, of course, is our way, and I think that's the way they're going to go. I strongly feel that. I don't know how they can rule against us. By the way, the other side, who asked for 5 minutes to talk, decided not to talk. And I suspect it might have been some of the things, particularly what Gerard had brought up in our case today, because really the things he kind of neutralized them. And I think that's why he decided not to talk. It could be that he got frightened by the code that we brought up, U.S. code, and maybe felt it was better for him to keep his mouth shut, because all of them are guilty of doing the same thing. They are guilty of conspiring in order to prevent us from exercising our right, our unalienable right, to control our political process. By becoming a committee man, we get the opportunity to control our destiny, because we actually get to make the decisions on who we'll allow to stay in and who we won't, depending on their actions and their attitude in office, who we'll support and who we won't support. So, but anyway, the court has three ways they can go. One thing they could do is they can send the case back, but that doesn't seem to make any sense. I think they realize, or if they don't, they should realize, by sending the case back, it's going to open the the state, actually, to become more liable than what they are already, because then they have to go through the process of discovery, which we can let go by, but we're not going to. If we go back, we will use discovery. As a matter of fact, I think I was talking with Gerard about this earlier or last night, that if they do push us back, I think immediately we're going to change the court position in the trial court and turn it into a court of record and take control of the court. So that's probably the way we will go. But going through a jury trial is going to cause a lot of problems where these people have to come in now and answer. But the other problem is they're doubly defaulted. So I don't know how they can send us back to a trial anyway. The second thing, and we brought this up numerous times between myself and Gerard, we probably brought it up at least four times, and we ended with it. Gerard ended with it, and then when they told Gerard that he had 30 seconds more because the other guy didn't want to talk, the judges said to Gerard, you got another 30 seconds. If you'd like to take it, you can take it now. And Gerard said, no, I'm finished. And I said, I'd like to take this 30 seconds. And all I did was just mimic the points that we did make throughout the case. And that is, Your Honors, all we're looking for is for the state to obey the law. We're not asking for anything more, nothing less, nothing more. Just obey the law. And I think that sealed what our position was. I started off with that, and then I ended with that. And Gerard brought it up a couple of times, and he ended with that. So the second thing that the court can do is rule against us. And I think they're going to have a real super tough time to do that. Because, first of all, the court on the other side had nothing to say. And even in their papers really is irrelevant. We neutralized that by responding on paper to everything they had to say. And their case was that, this case has already been heard before, which it really wasn't. We had opened this case up earlier in 2011. And when we filed the case on a Monday, we filed the case. It got filed with the county Supreme Court, the Albany County Supreme Court. It got filed on Wednesday or Thursday. But I had to get the papers to a judge because we were looking for an injunction. So I brought it to a Judge Platkin up in Albany, and we got it there on Friday. And he saw me at about 3:00 in the afternoon on Friday. Now, he made a phone call to the Board of Elections, made them aware of the case, faxed them over a copy. They said they already got it, but he faxed over some other paperwork to them. And they made a date tentatively for the 20th, which was the following Wednesday, for the case to be heard. just a hearing. And the hearing would have been focused particularly on an injunction. We were trying to get an injunction on the election, particularly focusing in on the committeemen, and trying to put them under the pressure so it would expedite this case. We were trying to kind of jump into that kind of a scheduling. So when I left his chambers on that Friday afternoon, he said to me, I got the 20th down, but that's not the date. That's just a date because I got to put a date on it. He says, you got to call the court, or they'll call you on Monday, and we'll send you a fax, and they'll tell you exactly what date and what time it's going to be on. So Monday came, and I called the court, maybe Monday afternoon, and they didn't have a date, or they didn't have a judge yet either. And they said, well, look, we'll call you or we'll fax you as soon as we know. And I said, okay. So Wednesday came, which was the 20th, which is the day the court was supposed to be heard, and I was getting a little worried. So I called again to the courts. And they said, nope, we don't have anything yet. We will get back to you. Don't worry about it. We'll give you a call or we'll give you a fax. So Wednesday came and went, as I said, Thursday, Friday. Now, either it was Saturday that weekend or Monday, right after the weekend, I received a decision in the mail, and the decision was not only that our paperwork for an injunction was rejected and denied, but they also denied our case and threw it out, saying we had no standing. Now, that Wednesday, which was the 20th, the Board of Election wrote a paper with a motion to move the court to have us thrown out for not having a cause of action. So that was sent out on Wednesday. It took until Thursday, Friday. It was written on Wednesday. It must have went out Wednesday late in the day. We got it Saturday, so we couldn't do nothing until Monday. And so we never received notice of motion for a movement for the court for no cause of action. There was no need to move on it that quickly because it was an emergency. Only the injunction should have been heard in an emergency. And we definitely, of course, should have received a phone call telling us that this was going to take place. So they literally threw us out of court within 7 or 8 days of filing the paperwork. And 2 days, with not even a two-day notice, and what's required for a motion, a notice of motion, is 8 days. And if you do it through mail, there's a 5 additional days that's usually given, so it's 14 days for notice of motion. They gave us 0 days because the day we received it, we had already been ruled on. So we didn't have our due process, and they tried to turn that around and say, well, we had due process. This case was heard already, and that a judge had already kicked us out. So that's where we were starting from. That's the only thing that they brought up in this case on the other side. Now, we straightened that out, and we told them the truth on the way it was in our paperwork. And we did bring some of this stuff up a little bit. I know Gerard brought some of this stuff up, and hopefully he's here or he'll be here shortly. He can talk a little bit about it. And so from our position, our argument, we have a lot of information. We have a lot of case law. We have case law that this very court had decided on. It's their words. We use their words. And some other case law, of course, in the second division. They're the third, I believe. We use some from the second, some from the third. We use U.S. Case law. We used numerous statutes, statutes in New York, particularly election law. We used some U.S. statutes. We used both constitutions, U.S. Constitution, New York Constitution. We used the Declaration of Independence. And numerous other things, and we laid out lots of different cases on how processes went in other cases, similar to our needs as far as the causes of actions were concerned. And just the fact that they broke the law, just the fact that they didn't obey the law, and we were injured by that, that's a cause of action. But we had 5 causes of action, plus that fact, that's 6 causes of action, and yet this judge decided we didn't have a cause of action. So clearly, that's a problem. And so now, at the appellate level, this is their dilemma. They're going to have to, whenever they write case law, usually they tell what the case is about, give some information about the case, and then they give the positions of both sides, and then they give the conclusion. I have no clue on how they can possibly write this up to give the conclusions on both sides and then end up with the state being, that is double defaulted, by the way, double defaulted, and Judge Teresi agreed that, and well, he ruled them double defaulted. We said they were double defaulted. He agreed, and he ruled them double defaulted. And in the courtroom, the lawyer for the New York State Board of Election, under Judge Teresi, this is, in the trial court, when asked, why didn't you just answer them? And she stood up in court and said, there was no good reason. Clearly, we had 20, 30 witnesses there, and of course, it's in the records. And we made it, we wrote it up in our case, in our records, that this is what she said. And so I have no clue on how they can possibly rule for the other side. So they're left only with one thing, and that is to give us what we're asking for. And quite simply, it's a very simple thing for judgment, for them to make a declaratory judgment concerning the election law, subsection 6-118, which is the election law that talks about an individual being elected at the primary election for the committeeman position, for a political seat, for an office elected at the primary election. And for them to enforce that they should let all the counties know of that position and then give, as the New York State Constitution and statutory law says very clearly, that if there is no contest, they must be deemed. So anybody who put in a designating petition that was proper, prima facie, with the title committeeman, must be deemed elected committeeman in the state of New York. And all you have to do then at that point is get sworn in and you're the elected committeeman. We also ask that they make it clear, to make it very clear, that members of the county committee are not elected at the primary election, that they owe their existence to, they have no statutory or constitutional right to office. They don't hold an office. They're not elected. And their powers from the rules, and the courts agreed on this, that that they're a private association or a corporation, and even the other side of the lawyer wrote in his papers that they were a private association and a corporation. So everybody agrees on that. These people are not elected in any formal way. They all agree they're elected only at party meetings, and that's it. So anyway, with that, let me get off the mic. I do have someone calling me. I want to get this phone call, so I'm going to mute myself for a minute. If anybody's got anything to say, comment, or question, pick up that mic.
Anybody there?
Okay, I was just told that I had to unmute everybody. So, okay, everybody's unmuted now.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, let me ask everyone that anybody who's not going to talk, at least right now, who's not going to, you know, not going to talk right now, they should mute themselves. And then when you want to talk, unmute yourself. I didn't realize I had to unmute everybody. Go ahead. Who wants to talk first?
Does #6 work on the keypad of a computer?
Yes. If you've got a computer, you do it to #6, yes. Whether you're Skype or telephone, #6 is it.
Okay, now do you hear me?
I can hear you. Who's talking? Give us your name.
Ken.
How you doing, Ken?
Good, Ken. Good. I just did a #6 and it didn't mute me.
I see Joe Skews muting himself. So, but anyway, who's got a question or a comment or would like to comment on today's case if they were up there or expound a little bit on it.
John, Carl.
Carl had his hand up, yeah.
Go ahead, Carl.
So I was curious, what do you think one of the judges was getting at when he was asking if there were Democrats involved?
Yeah, that was a good question. I was perplexed by that because I really didn't want to answer it. And, you know, and I think I made it clear that everybody, we happened to be Republicans here, but we had Democrats who ran and were not... And he acknowledged that he understood that. So I don't know why they brought that up at all.
It's almost like he would give the reins just for the Republican committee and not for the Democrat committee.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what I think. And Gerard maybe can expound on this because he had some thoughts on this too. And I've been back and forth on it, but I've come to a conclusion, and I think I agree with what Gerard was saying earlier. Look, they read these cases of these other people. They were, some of these cases were pretty serious cases. One was on child molestation. Another one was of a child who, one of the parents wanted to move to Kentucky or something. And, you know, so they were pretty serious cases. And you can tell by the questions and the interaction between the judges and the people, you know, the lawyers that came up, you can tell that they had read the cases. They had intimate knowledge, and they said, what about this and that and the other thing? And they were talking about things that had not been brought up yet, so clearly they had read the cases. When it came to our case, I didn't When I was at the podium, I didn't have an impression particularly because I wasn't watching the judges. I was really focusing in on my notes. I was a little nervous, and I was trying to get through things. My time was limited. I was trying to get as much out as I could. But later on, from what other people watching and their experience, what they thought and how they reacted, it was like a nonchalant attitude towards us. I don't think they read our case. I think that they presumed we were just another committee man case, and they made their way up into the appellate court. They usually don't get this far, but here they are. They're pro se. What is this going to be about? And so I think maybe that might be what had happened. And when we started to quote statutes and law, and we got into Constitution, Declaration, and we bring in U.S. Code, they started to get a little excited. I didn't know that. I was told this by others who were experienced, you know, watching the judges. And they started making notes and things. So maybe now they're starting to take us serious and realize, wait a second, this is a lot more than just a, you know, a fact that someone wants to be a committeeman and they were denied a petition. Because the question was, did you put your party name? Did you make the, you know, apparently they didn't look at any of the exhibits. We had all the exhibits. It was clear. But then they understood that. So anyway, Gerard, you want to comment some more on this?
Yeah. I don't believe they read the case. Like I said, I think that these cases with the family court, they get a lot of those. And they get a lot of Board of Election cases that they probably consider a pain in the neck, petty stuff. I mean, the case before us when I was sitting there was about ballots, absentee ballots, and things that were thrown off, they're fighting over. I mean, one guy handed his ballot in at the Board of Elections, but because the envelope wasn't signed, they threw it out. And he said, but they took it. And so it was an incompetent employee, but they threw it out anyway. So this is the type of crap they deal with elections. It's like the same old crap. And they already know that. It doesn't matter how many cases come up there. They basically know that this system is broken. And when they ever hear of an election case coming up, I think they got this automatic shutoff. We got two people fighting over a ballot, blah, blah, blah. So they really didn't look at our case because it was kind of wordy. And they probably maybe even skimmed it if they looked at it at all. But I do believe that once we got going, that the way we were talking and the laws we were quoting, and then everything I said basically reinforced what you said, but in a different manner, in a different way. I mean, mine was more of a direct plea and more emotional than yours. Yours was more nuts and bolts. By the time we got done, they were in full alert, because when you started mentioning that Title 18, they understand that's the thing that you use against public officials that break the law. And at the appellate level, I think they're very tuned into that. So that got their attention, and then they listened to the rest of it. And basically, I did a lot of accusations. What I accused them of, I accused the Board of Election of crimes. I accused Ms. Galvin of crimes. I accused them of collusion in a nice way. I didn't come out and say it like that, you know what I mean? But I said it. And then I said that Mr. Palladino either didn't read the case and understand it, because if he did, he should have been fighting for us as the Attorney General, the people's lawyers. He should have been looking at the case when he came into it after the fact, and he should have sanctioned them for not following court procedure and all the nasty things they pulled. They were very surprised at that. And I said, but it also may be that he never received the full case, a case all in chronological order the way it should be, because they kept sending the papers back to us. And we kept having to put them back, and I don't know that they went back. And so I made an excuse for him. I said he might not have ever been privy to this knowledge. So that gave him sort of an out, you know. And so what John over there talking about the law and Title 18 about violating that law, and me in there, you know, making these criminal accusations, and They were very much at attention on that, and you know, there was a case before us, and they said, "Oh, do you think this needs judicial review?" And the guy said, well, no, I don't think it's that. He said, you know, the judge could have been incompetent with the fact. You see, right away he backed up and wouldn't accuse the judge of anything. I don't know if you remember that case, John. But it was a one or two cases before us. And so apparently when you go up to the appellate court and you make a claim, these guys are the guys that do the judicial review, or at least send it up to a judicial review, because they did ask that one guy. And he kind of backed off it right away, because I don't think these lawyers like to make accusations of judges because they got to work on them.
Right.
But what I did was I basically made, in not so many words, many accusations. Now, here's the problem. It's not a problem, actually. It's providence on our side. When we answered the brief, we failed to put in all the letters and all the crap that went on. We figured that the state wasn't even going to be there. We assumed they were in default. I mean, never mind assume. Teresi said they were in default. He said they were in double default. So, and I said that. I said we figured that the trial court put that business to bed, so we didn't answer it in the brief. So I basically told them everything that she did, but they have no paperwork of those facts. And I'm going to tell you something. That is a providential thing, because if we would have put that paperwork in and gave them proof of the crimes that went on, and then we're over there quoting Title 18 to them, that would make them party to the crime if they didn't do anything about it. And if we push that issue really hard and they come in and do something about it, the committee man case will be lost, because what's going to hit the newspapers is judge gets sanctioned and board of election lawyer gets fired, blah, 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 blah. And that's not going to help us at all. That's not what we were there for. And so it actually was a good thing we didn't put that paperwork in, because they don't have to pursue that, because I started my thing saying we had no intentions of talking of the default. We assumed they were defaulted, and Mr. Palladino brought up the default at the 11th hour. So they knew we didn't come prepared to defend that. My words defended it, but our writings didn't. Although, in one of the paragraphs, basically, John did cover it in two very nice, neat paragraphs in our brief. It's covered.
Yeah. And maybe I should read that, because, you know, we didn't realize how powerful this was. Although maybe at the time I wrote it, it was powerful and I realized it. But really, it kind of put the cherry on top of the ice cream here, because I think it was part of the Title 18. From talking to people who watched their expressions and their response, it was really when I got theirs when they really all became active and focused and writing and noting and all that stuff. So when they go back now to read our case, which we don't think that they did read, because, again, you know, generally speaking, these cases are just referred back to the rules because that's what controls these guys. Well, now they realize this isn't that kind of case. And so these are the last three sentences. Well, I'll put four sentences. Three sentences or four? Let's see, 21, 22. These are the last three sentences in the last paper we served onto the other side and filed in our brief. And it states this. It's titled, Violations of Rights Met by Silence. The state remains silent to the truth that a law that cannot be annulled by legislators but us, but as an alternative buried it, thereby expunging from memory. In other words, the legislators could not get rid of Election Law 6-118, which talked about the election of a committeeman. They couldn't get rid of it, so instead they buried it. So that's what that sentence was saying. Judge Conley, next sentence, Judge Conley remained silent. That's the judge on the very first case that were thrown out in 7 days without due process. Judge Conley remained silent when he exceeded his jurisdiction, shut out the plaintiff from an ex parte hearing with no notice of motion, without due process, dismissing the case unlawfully, and thereby did not do the just thing, that being commanding the state to obey the law. Judge Teresi remained silent, dismissing the case unlawfully, when he did not do the just thing, that being commanding the state to obey the law. And that's the last words we wrote in our briefs. And so I think that kind of works out great, considering the way things, I think, went today. Mic's open.
That was a great presentation. You guys did a good job.
Thank you. Who's that?
Ken.
Oh, Ken again. Okay. All right. Anybody else have any questions or comments or anything? I mean, mic is open. You know, we talked a little bit about jurisdiction. We can talk about that, too. And anybody that's on Skype, if they're not... not talk, but they got their mic open. So just mute your mic.
You got an echo.
John, someone's you're coming out. You're all garbage.
Yeah, someone has their mic open.
No, it's you. It's an echo.
Yeah, it's coming from everybody talking. We're echoing through someone's phone.
Yeah, it's coming through when you do when you talk too, Carl.
Yeah, I just muted everybody just for a second, and I'm talking, and I'm not getting it back. So I'm going to unmute everyone again. But everybody, if you're not talking, mute your mic. And you can mute your mic by hitting pound six, I believe. All right, so let me unmute everyone. Unmute all. Okay, everybody's unmuted. If you're not going to talk or you're not talking at the moment, mute your mic. Okay, who wants to talk now?
Is your brief on the online? Did you put
yes. Everything's up online. There's everything we have submitted, everything they submitted back is up online.
What's not up online is the oral arguments that we did today because we didn't print them, and I think that maybe we should put them up online. What you read today and what I read
right.
today. We should put that online because I think that's important. Because
we'll just call them notes. I didn't get through all mine, but we'll just call them notes. Originally, we had 10 minutes, and we tried to squeeze 10 minutes. I thought I'd be able to get done in 5 minutes, but I just couldn't get through it quick enough. But I did get most of it out.
I think that one of those judges had a speed-up button on that clock on the table in front of us.
Absolutely.
I think Carl, they pushed it faster.
Call them oral notes.
What was that? I didn't understand that. What did you say, Ken?
Call the today's recordings oral notes.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah, it'll be on the notes of our oral argument at the appellate court. So that's what we'll do. We'll post them up. You have to send me a copy of yours, Gerard.
Yeah, right,
mic is open.
They're handwritten, and I have to type them, so.
I'd like to ask a question, please.
Yeah.
How does this case from 2011 transition to the case that you filed against Teresi and all the other committee men about our petitions being thrown out?
Okay. Yeah, as I told the story of the 2011 case and where we're at and how we got to the appellate court, that's one case. While that case was going on, you see they assaulted us again. You know, it's like you're walking down the street, you get mugged, and you go and you file a complaint and you try to get justice. And then the next year, you know, next day you walk down the same street, you get mugged by the same guy. It's a whole new case. It's a whole new thing. It's another assault. So we have two cases. We had one we filed in 2011, and we had one we filed in 2012 for that election period. And on that one, I think we had 14 or 15 people who signed up on that case as plaintiffs. Now, we went in on that case under purely common law under a court of record. So we took control of the court. As the process went on, we wrote papers as if we were the court. They kind of just ignored that for a while. And then we overturned Judge Teresi, then tried to take control of the court, and we overturned his ruling, and we fined him a silver dollar. And they didn't say much about that again. They, you know, it was like they were perplexed, I'm sure. And then he did something else. I forget what it was. And we went after him again. And that's when he came back to us and told us. What did he say exactly, Gerard? Do you remember in his papers?
He said you're going to jail. That's
yeah, Gerard's going to jail. I remember, yeah.
Well, the way I read it, he said that, you know, this was frivolous and you guys have come before me so many times and I don't want to see this again.
Right.
I'm wondering what the appellate court thinks of his decisions.
Well, that's what we're waiting on now.
And what kind of time frame is that going to be when we're going to see some results on that?
Okay, well, you got to remember, this is the first time we're doing this. So, and what we did has not been done probably in New York in 50, 80, 100 years. Who knows? I have no clue. There are people doing this in other states, and they're doing different things. But what we did, which came from, what's his name, Thornton.
Thornton.
Was that when we felt at the point where the judge was going to probably put us in jail if we tried to go back at him again, he'd find us in contempt, we then did a petition for a writ of mandamus. We petitioned the upper court, which is the appellate court, for a writ of mandamus. And a writ of mandamus is a order. We're asking for the upper court to order the lower court to obey the higher court. So we're asking the appellate court to order the Supreme Court to obey the court of record, which is a higher court than them and the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court doesn't recognize us as their boss, but they do recognize the appellate court as the boss. That's why we went there for what's called a writ of mandamus. Now, the problem is in 1938, they did away with this writ of mandamus, and they combined it in an Article 78, which they tie into the gun permit problems. If you have a problem getting a gun permit, you file a show cause under Article 78. And they kind of compiled any writs that you might want to go through that. Now, since lawyers will never do a writ of mandamus on a judge, they kind of just eliminated that whole process. It's been eliminated since 1938. Now, it's not that it can't be used. It's just that they haven't used it and they hid it. So that puts us into a situation where we were following their instructions and writing up a brief and getting together a case as if it was going for the appellate court when it wasn't. And no matter how much I argued with them, telling them we're not looking, we're just asking the court to correct the lower court so the trial can continue. And I think at that time, up until that time, they were very friendly. Anything you asked them, at this point now, anything you asked them, they were very polite. They told you where to find it, everything. But at this point, once we started to push this at this level, I started to feel we were getting resistance and they were treating us different. And they were hiding things from us. That's what I really felt. With hindsight, what I should have done was just made a very simple paper and call it a show cause. Give them the show cause, the 78, but just call it a show cause. And say, why a writ of mandamus shouldn't be executed to you upon by the appellate court. And then I shouldn't have made all of the paperwork. I should have made it very slim, and then I should have pushed it through, because they cannot. When you go for a writ of mandamus, they're not allowed to discuss the case. They're not allowed to rule on the case. They're only there to enforce the law when the law isn't being obeyed. And that's the only thing they can rule on in that case. So we still have that before the appellate court. Matter of fact, I'm going to call it tomorrow to find out if we have a date on that yet. That should be coming up in February. But I haven't heard anything on it yet. I'm going to call up and see what I can get. And that's going to be an interesting thing, because no matter how this case goes on, we're still going for that other case. We're still going to get that writ pushed through. We want precedence on that. And then we'll go back to the court. And we'll rule just like the other, like we have to. We're going to go through the two more weeks of trial, and then we're going to make a ruling, and we're going to find the judge again, maybe for 10 silver dollars or 100 silver dollars, I don't know, something. And we have to think about that. And then after we do that, at least that sets a precedent for a court of record in New York State. And that's something people can use anywhere in New York State as a case law. Then, depending on time, we do plan on going and suing Judge Conley and Judge Teresi and the New York State Election Law Board of Election Attorney. We'll probably sue the two commissioners, both Republican and Democrat Party. And we'll see. I think that's pretty much it. I don't know if there's anyone else, but I think we need to sue these people. And so we're kind of planning to do that, time permitting. We become the committeemen, we're going to have a lot of work. And if that's going to interfere with that, then I won't go through the lawsuit. We'll wait till later because there's no, you know, they can't restrict us to a statute of limitation. So we want to do what we have to do in New York first, though.
I'm sorry. Listen, the case today that we did today, I think they have up to 45 days to rule. Usually they don't do it quicker than a week. A week is usually the quickest they do it by the time they make the decision and send it down to get written up and then send it back and check it and come out. So I don't expect any kind of ruling for at least a week, but I think they can
take 2 weeks has been the it appears logically that that's probably a turnaround is 2 weeks about.
Right. So we're going to get some kind of a ruling from them on the 2011 case. You know, in just a few weeks. So that's going to, depending on what they rule there, is going to determine what our next step is.
But does that only affect the people that were in the
no, that affects anybody with a primary.
2011?
No, that's forever. If you file, whenever you file one, once they make the ruling, anybody who files a designating petition that's prima facie, it's done correctly with the proper title, and it goes uncontested, must be deemed elected. That would be in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, any forever, okay? That's what it is. It wouldn't be just for a year or two. If they tried to pull that on us, then we go right for the jugular at that point. I mean, we definitely would go right for the lawsuit, right for title. We'd take this right into federal court, and we'll push the U.S. 42 and 18, and we'll start putting these people in jail.
Well, that seems like that would have a nice waterfall effect for all of us. In terms of the Commissioner of Elections, does that only encompass the Commissioner of New York State, or does that filter down to all the counties as well?
No, that would only apply to the New York State, the Board of Election, Republican Party Commissioner, and the Democratic Party Commissioner. Only those two individuals. They are the responsible parties. It is clear in election law that one of their jobs is to administrate and to enforce the election law. They broke and hid and manipulated the election law insofar as they even expunged and participated in the expungement and the hiding of the elected committeemen. And they have created the doorkeepers and the policies and procedures. All of these 62 commissioners on each county for each party, which is a total of, 124, all of those commissioners on the county level, none of them are really guilty of anything because they haven't got a clue. They're only doing what they're told to do. Because it doesn't exist in their policies and procedures.
So that wouldn't be a conspiracy to commit fraud across 62 counts?
Oh, sure it would be. Yeah, it's a conspiracy to commit fraud when more than one person does it. Since both parties done it, you got two. You also got the matter of fact, we probably should sue the heads of the Republican and Democratic Party, at least on the state level, which would encounter all 62 chairmen and county chairmen. So definitely, once two people get together, that's a conspiracy. Even if there's only one, remember, one person can violate your unalienable rights. And once they do that, they're guilty, and they could be held accountable criminally, and they could be held accountable civilly. When two of them get together, you could still get them criminally and civilly, but now you have a conspiracy, an additional charge. In the case of the judges, you have two judges that worked with a lawyer, that worked with the commissioners, and there's other people involved, but at least those people, that's a conspiracy. That's a conspiratorial group right there.
Then it's RICO.
That's right. Now we go into RICO.
Yeah, not only that, but it reminds me of something that Andrew Jackson said when he routed out the den of vipers with the Second Bank of the United States. And,
right.
It's just criminal from the top to the bottom.
We kind of really don't want to get too lost in that. We want to try – look, our focus has always been and continues to be, first and foremost, to save the republic. And we realize we have to do that in New York first. As New York goes, so goes Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and so on. It's just going to, you know, just move across this country like a wildfire. I'm no doubt in my mind about it.
I'm going to give you a little prophecy here, and not necessarily that it'll come true, but if the party machine realizes what we're talking about and what we're going to do, they will gladly throw some sheep to the wolves. In other words, they will push the criminal thing. They will throw Galvin under the bus and Teresi with great fanfare so that they can keep the committee man system. In other words, they will use that to distract what we're talking about, that there is no elected officials in both party associations, private associations. If they understand what we're talking about, in order to preserve that system, they'll throw everybody under the bus just to distract it, just to have newspaper headlines, because they don't care about those people. What they care about is their system. And the thing is I really don't want them to get too much into the criminal stuff, because that's going to take away from the nuts and bolts of the fact that they've hidden this committee man for 80 years. You know, I mean, if they do that and they make a bunch of fanfare and they're going to slap us on the back and say, oh, you got rid of a bad judge, good boys, and a bad board of election, the only thing we can do at that point is use that press to scream about the committee man and say, listen, that's nothing. What's something is you people have no representation. I mean, at that point, we'll have to use that press to turn the focus back on the committee man. I mean, that's the strategy that we're going to need to do here if that should happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if they understand the implications, because if we win as the elected committee men, this system is completely turned on its head. It's turned back to the way it's supposed to be overnight, you know, because we go in and we just take control. And if they understand that that's what's going to happen, they're going to do everything in their power to try to stop that.
But right, you're going to have to try to go after the detachers and
well,
the people to throw everybody's under their bus.
Here's the things that we want to get involved with. Again, you know, suing these people is a second thought. And if we have the time, depending on the situation, and maybe 3 months later we could do it, I don't know. But we have work to do. And hopefully and this is the job of the people in this room today and others who have been here maybe that's not here tonight. This is your job now, is to get other people involved in this process and what we're doing, to understand this process, that we're taking the political and the judicial process back to the people in New York 100%, not part way. This is real, true power. And when we're successful, and I do believe we're going to be successful, and we may be very successful in the next 2 weeks, I think we're going to be. But nevertheless, we're not giving up. We do have a Court of Appeals, and then we can go into the U.S. Supreme Court twice. So we've got three more places we can go in each case. But I don't think we're going to have to go that far. I think we're there. I think these judges are going to be too frightened to rule against us because let me tell you, if these judges rule against us, I'm dying to see what they have to say, because U.S. Code 1842 applies to them too. And we will add them into our list. We will not shy away from that. I think that's where our power is, and that's what we have. Look, you'll have freedom when you have a government that fears the people. Thomas Jefferson said that, or was it Franklin? I think it was Jefferson.
What do you think they don't want pro se lawyers for?
Because they're not ruled.
Because they have no control over them. Here's right, John, he's coming in as a pro se, and now he's going to threaten to sue them if they don't do the right thing. That
right.
Never happens with a lawyer, never, because they'd ruin him.
They'd be disbarred and thrown out. But here's the thing. One of the first order of businesses that we have to do is we have to get all the sheriffs together. And we'll have to sit and think about that. Do we give them 2 weeks or 3 weeks and we call a meeting? We've already spoke to Sheriff Mack. Sheriff Mack said he'd be here in a heartbeat. Just give him a call. He'll be on the next flight if we can get him to meet the sheriffs. Well,
listen,
when we become the committee men.
You give him 1 week, John. Listen to me. Cuomo's talking about getting rid of all semi-automatic weapons completely in this state.
Right, right.
And we don't have 3 weeks. They don't have.
I agree. If everybody agrees that 1 week is it, then that's what we'll do. But we need to get together with the other elected committee men, talk about this, make an agreement, and do it. And we will notify every sheriff in the state of New York, every single one of them. We'll let them know in no uncertain terms to be at this meeting. We'll give them the date, and they better be ready to spend the day because we have a lot to talk to them about. And let them know in no uncertain terms that they don't show up, just send their badge in because they're fired. We're going to recall them the very next day. We're going out. We'll start the recall papers to walk, and we'll commit to do that, okay? So we will get every sheriff there, and then we will give them – we will let them know – we'll give them a piece of the people's mind, okay, and what their job is, and we'll get Sheriff Mack to talk to them, and then we're gonna go to the – we're going to let them know, no more federal money. We're going to talk with the state. The state's going to fund you. And your job now is to protect the people. And we'll have to think about what are the some of the things we want to tell these sheriffs. And so we'll have a meeting for that. We'll discuss that and make a decision. We're then going to do the same thing with the Senate. I think they'll be in session next month and the month after. And if not, we'll call into session. And we will go up and we're going to talk to them. And we're going to let them know in no uncertain terms, if you don't have a constitutional right to vote on a particular issue or to bring one up, don't bring it up. And when you do bring these new issues up, you should come talk to us first because we'll let you know whether that's the people's will or not. And when the committee, because it's time to put a real hard, hold on these guys, a short leash. Thank you. We're going to do that with both the Senate and the Assembly, okay? Then we have what? I think we have 27 congressmen. Or is that what? We used to have 29, didn't we? I think we're down to 27 congressmen.
Yeah, we lost two because of everybody leaving New York State because of
right.
The high
well,
tax.
When we're done, people will be moving back, okay? I hope, anyway. But anyway, we're going to call those 27 together. We're going to let them know in no uncertain terms when you go to Washington, don't take a dime. Because if we hear that you're taking a dime, the sheriff will be waiting for you at the border because it's a crime. Do not take a dime. All this is payoffs. If people are going to get money from special interest groups so that they support what they want to do and not the people, then they sold their vote and they're no longer in there for the people. They work for the people. They don't work for special interest groups. They don't work for corporations. Okay?
You
and
know,
so, yeah?
Along with obeying the Constitution, the word obey, and their oaths, the next thing they have to do is make lobbying illegal because the
exactly.
Lobbyists are absolutely illegal.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
With a criminal.
It doesn't matter that all the other congressmen, 430 congressmen minus the 27, so 403 congressmen are taking money from all of these people. That's fine. Just don't you do it because that's a crime in New York State. We don't care what the rest of them do, because once New York does that, the rest of them are going to do it. Then we're going to let them know, don't vote on any bill or anything that comes up that's not constitutional. And if you're not sure if it's constitutional or not, just ask us. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to do the same thing with our two U.S. senators, okay? And that's the beginning. That's just the beginning. Once we put them in order, and then we let the governor know, hey, no more money is leaving the state going to federal government unless it's constitutional money. All the money collected here that's constitutional is coming here. Also, we're going to deal with the gun permits. You know, it's the right. Why should I have to get a permit to have a gun? Okay. We need to talk about this as the committeemen once we get the power. And we need to make some really hardcore decisions. And we have to exercise them, execute them. We have a plan and an idea how to turn the money in New York to silver. Let's get rid of the dollar. We don't want the credit no more. We want U.S. Anybody wants to deal with business and it comes into New York, turn it to silver and send it to New York because we're just a silver state. I mean, there's a lot of things, and people have other ideas, I'm sure, but we have a lot of work to do in the first 3 months, and we're going to turn the state upside down. We're going to turn Washington upside down, and I think the other states, when they start to see what New York is doing, they're going to go crazy.
And all this time I thought Nevada was the silver state. But be that as it may, we're kind of lucky here in Monroe County. We have a sheriff that's actually pro-Second Amendment. But how does that transition to our governor, who's made some really, really draconian comments about what's going on and what he wants to accomplish?
Your sheriff
I don't care.
How do we put him in check?
I don't care if our governor is Hitler himself. That's fine. As long as he doesn't do anything against the Constitution, That's okay. Once he does, once we put him in check and he doesn't obey the people, we recall him. As a matter of fact, we also talked about getting a jury pool, and the committee men should be the beginning of that process. We have, we're going to have 16,300 committee men, which will all be getting educated in these things, and we need to educate our election districts. Well, why don't we all become jurors? Why don't we get into the jury pool? Not that you're going to serve, but if you're needed, you'll be there. If you get arrested, you want your fellow peers to be on that jury to make the decision for you. And when the judge says, hey, you got to rule on the – no, go to hell. No, we'll rule the way – we will rule the law and we'll rule the facts, and you'll shut up and sit in your seat because that's the job of the jury. It has nothing to do with the judge. There's a lot,
John,
we have to talk about and learn.
John, I couldn't agree more. I sat on a jury 2 years ago for a rape case that was just – it was amazing. The facts, and myself and one other person was like the only voice of reason in the wilderness.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing.
Well, we need to change that. We need to have people who understand freedom, who understand liberty, who understand the Constitution to some degree, and understand jurisdiction and understand the place of the judge and the justice system and the political system. And the other thing we need to do is we need to build grand juries. Now, this is a very interesting one. We need 25 people in each county to join up on the grand jury. We can get more, but only 25 at a time would serve. And when you have a situation, you know, you call the grand jury together and you make a decision on it, and then you indict or you don't indict. Now, one of the interesting things, and we're looking into, this is our next focus of education, is on juries and grand juries, which hopefully soon we'll be focusing in on and start building. And the grand jury can remove anyone from office within the state like that. If the 25 of them get together and see them as a criminal and point their finger to them as a criminal, come to meet and say, yes, we're indicting them, they can pull them out of office also. 25 people got to get together and do it. So this is up to the people. This is up to the people in this room. This is up to the people that have been visiting this room, the people in this room today, to get focused in on this, and let's do it. And I'm telling you, once New York does it, it's going to move across the state. And we'll, you know, the only way we're going to put Washington back on track is to first put New York back on track, or if you're in Ohio, put Ohio or Pennsylvania or whatever state you're from, put your state on track, and then send your people to Washington to start working to put them on track. And let me tell you, once all the states realize and start moving in that direction, now we will take control of the federal government. The states will control it, and that's what we want.
We have to get the states to be sovereign again. None of them are sovereign.
Well, New York is on its way, I think. I hope people see what we're doing and realize how important this is and that this is the only peaceful solution. You know, there's been some of us yelling this out for 3 or 4 years now. This is the only – there is no – unless you have power, you have nothing. You can carry all the signs you want. You can write all the letters.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. It's
right.
Not going to change Washington. It may slow them down a little bit, but they still keep going and they still keep moving us closer and closer to a police state. And the only way you're going to stop this is to take power. And we found the Achilles heel. We found out how we can take political power and how we can take judicial power and how we could do it now. It's now. We can do it now. Judicial power is available right now. Political power, I believe, is going to be available in the next 2 weeks. And if not in the next 2 weeks, very soon after. But I believe in the next 2 weeks. And it's up to the people to get up and do something and then come to the meetings and let's make some decisions and let's save the country. It's more important than your job. I dare to say, to some degree, you know, we have to put this above our families. Of course, we have children and we have wives and we have certain requirements we have to do and we have to take. But, you know, sometimes our family does have to suffer a little bit. I know mine has, because I've spent a lot of our savings to do what we're doing right now. And it's hurt us, but it has to be done.
And it's more important. I'm sorry. It's more important than North Carolina's martial law.
Absolutely.
What's going on in North Carolina? They got martial law? Wow.
Yeah, there's an interview with one of the lieutenants in the police department that claims that the leaders of the police departments are telling them about doing martial law. They're getting them ready.
Preparing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're going to use this gun thing to make martial law. In other words, they've come to the decision, the other side, that this is their now or never. And the reason they're pushing so hard, and I mean, I think it's really stupid for them to be pushing for this now, because they don't even nearly have enough guns off the street to be even talking like this.
No.
But what's happened is they understand that there's a great awakening. And so for them, they're so close, that if they don't grab now, and they usually do, you know, two steps forward, one step backwards. I think they feel that they can't afford to step backwards, that if they step backwards and back up a year, everybody's going to know what's what. See, the Internet has really hurt them. And they're not as in control as they want. It's all psyops. They want us to think they're in control. What's that? Oh, somebody's coming through.
Hello?
What's that?
I said, Gerard, you are spot on, my brother.
Well, they know they have Europe. They know they have Europe. And so what it is the New World Order is going to grab, and they're not sure they're going to get America, but they're willing to risk a revolution over here. And if they don't get us, they don't get us, but they're going to have Europe because Europe has no guns.
Well, remember, in Oklahoma now, they've got troops on the street, and they have checkpoints, and they have open martial law in some spots. But then in Monroe County here in New York, we had a gun show last weekend, and they sold out literally of every AR-15 semi-automatic sporting rifle, and I use that term properly, within the first hour of the gun show opening.
How much did they get for them?
It's crazy. But people are embracing their rights finally.
Yeah.
Because they see that they may be going away.
Listen, Obama is the best gun salesman of the year. All the gun shops have his picture, but salesman of the year.
Absolutely. He has done more for gun sales than any other person in the last 6 years.
When you're dealing with this New World Order, though, there's not a problem that they have that they don't know how to think outside the box and say, how can we turn this into an asset? They are the best people for making lemonade out of lemons. So they know that people are going to get guns. What they're going to do is they're going to try to use that fact. I'm going to tell you I think they're going to use it. I think the people are going to come out in force. I mean, a lot of people don't think that people will put their foot down, but I don't believe that. And so what's going to happen is, and they've already been doing this, they're going to have something going on where all our troops are out of the country. They've been pulling the National Guard out, who are supposed to be under the governor. They'll get something going in the Middle East. They'll pull all the National Guard out. And then what they'll do is they'll put us under martial law. There'll be no troops here. The small arms treaty, which is already signed by Obama, which hasn't been ratified by the houses like it's supposed to be, but he won't do it. He'll say, I don't care. I don't have to do it. And what he's going to do is he's going to ask the Security Council to give a vote, and they're going to say, yeah, America's out of control. The president needs help. His troops are over in the Middle East. We got to bring in China or Russia or somebody to go over there and disarm the people. That's their tactic right there.
I'd like to move back a little bit to the sheriff, but go ahead. Who wanted to talk?
I've got a paper here called The Constitution Trumps Treaties, and it's court cases and everything.
That's going to be a revolution if they do that. Don't get me wrong, but you see, that's what they're willing to risk that now.
Is that in a PDF? You have it.
Say what?
Is that in a PDF form?
No, I'll have to scan it in and ship it out.
Yeah, if you want to send it to me, I'll post it up on New York Committeeman.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I just want to ask the question. Is all your paperwork in PDF?
Well, it doesn't matter. If you send it, any way you send it, I can turn it into a PDF. If you send it in Word, I try to put PDFs up there because everyone can read that. You know, the court, we have a court course up online now. We ask for a $30 donation, so anybody interested, I mean, if you can't afford the $30, you send me an email. I'll give you access anyway. But we really could use the money, so if you can give us $100, we take that too. But you can go up there, and now we have PDFs on that, but we also have a lot of Word programs, mostly so that people can take these cases and use them as a framework to build their own cases. You know, you just open up a case that's very similar to the one that you want to file, and then just start making it your case, changing the words and the stories, and you can add and take away whatever you got to do. But our court course, it's 150 pages or something. I forget how many pages, but I think it's pretty focused. And once you go through the course, if you have any questions, we have these meetings every Monday. This is the place to bring your questions, and we can answer the questions. And you'll start to see, if you just read through it like a book, read through it twice like a book, and read our court cases like a book. And by the time you get to the end of that, I want to tell you, you'll have a really good understanding and appreciation on how the judicial system works enough to be able to go forward yourself. We learned that we should work in groups, and you should learn work with groups in your neighborhood, and we should help each other in our court cases and become, you know, if you're going up against the state, two or three or four of us, you put our names on it, let's go do it. Come in as a court, become witnesses for each other's in the court cases, and let's do. And you can come here, and we can work with you and talk with you and teach each other on how this whole process works.
So, are most of your paperwork turned in for hearings done in PDFs?
We put most up on PDFs online right now, but in the course we have them in Word,
uh-huh.
So you can use them in Word. Or you can go online and download them just for people to be able to come to our site and read the cases. We did it in PDF on site that way.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get the course, you'll get a zip download also. And in the zip load is lots of files. And we're adding to that. And every time we update it, we'll send an email to everyone that has gone to download it. We'll send them an email, let you know we updated something. And we'll put information on the page what we updated.
What's the title of the course?
I think it's what do we call it? Common law and court procedure, I believe we called it. And we teach through this course how the lawyer works and how they put it together, and we teach you how to write as they write, but you do a little bit of a tweak. And of course, we're focusing in more towards the common law side of things. So when you get a little information on how things are done in the process, you know, the normal court process, you learn some other things in the common law process, which will be done a little different. And, of course, the common law will trump the other process. But it's important to write like a lawyer so that they understand, follow the procedures, follow the rules, use the process that they use, understand the games that they're going to play to try to have you thrown out of court, understand how to protect yourself from that. I haven't done really a paper on that yet, but I will be adding that. I'll be adding things to the course as we go. And one of the things is how to keep yourself in the court and prevent them from throwing you out. And it's a very simple thing. There's only a few things you need to know about that. So I'm going to write a page or two on that, and we'll add that to the book. And once we update it, we'll let everyone know it's been updated and so on.
Write like a lawyer, but don't think like one.
Excuse me?
Write like a lawyer, but don't think like one.
Well, exactly. Yeah, we're going to talk like the people. Okay? But we need to know the process. You know, when you file a case, there's numerous things. You have to get an index number, and you have to fill out a form. We show you how to fill the form out. You have to get an RJI, which is a request for judicial intervention. We'll give you that and show you. We'll show you a copy of that and explain. We show you how we filled ours out. But you have to create a summons, and the summons is the same thing over and over again. You just put your court address and basic information. We explain that. So you have to have the RJI, the index number, then you have to have the summons, then you have to have what's called either the complaint or the action at law. An action at law is a common law words for a complaint. So you have to have your action at law. You have to have at least one affidavit. You have to have a memorandum, your exhibits, and you got to package all this together and get it out. And if you break or miss any of those parts, you just have to know the procedure. And we lay it right out. We call it an anatomy of a court case. And then we break each part of the court case, filing the complaint, going through the process of discovery, if you want to use discovery, And that's up to you whether you want to use discovery or not, because in common law, discovery is not a requirement. You could shut the other side down by saying, I'm not going to comply with that. I'm not asking you for nothing. You're not getting nothing from me. I give you everything already. Everything is, and you're really going to give them everything in the case anyway you got already, because you already know that you should win, because that's why you're going to court. Otherwise, you wouldn't be there. You don't belong there, okay? So, you know, we go through all this process. I tell you, once you read through the book, I think it becomes pretty clear. You might have a few foggy ideas that you need to ask about here or there. And again, this room at any time, or send me an email. Well, I prefer in a room, because writing email, it's a long, it's hard to answer in writing. I prefer, you know, doing it in this room, answering these questions. And others who are, you know, excelling in this, they can answer questions that maybe I can't answer, you know? So, but I'd like to quickly just go back to the sheriff thing. And I think this is very important. And I think at one of our first meetings when we get together, and we should talk to Sheriff Mack about this. You know, the sheriff was created back at the Magna Carta. That's when they created the sheriff. And the sheriff was a police force for the king or for the free men. Okay? They're the people's police force. Okay? And we know that the town courts that they've created all across our country, all of them are nisi prius courts. They're even though they're supposed to be courts of record in New York State, they're actual admiralty courts, and they work under admiralty law, and they operate as if they're going out after a pirate. That's how the whole process works. That's how they get you in the court, as if you're a pirate. And as soon as you accept their jurisdiction by pleading guilty or not guilty, well, no contest, that's it. You're in their system. You have to deny and challenge jurisdiction. But my point is this. The town courts went out and created not that the town courts did this, but these snakes, I think, created the state, the town police force in order to comply or make people comply to the town courts. Then you have the city police. Then you have the state police. And the sheriff has become way down low on the totem pole when he is supposed to be really the top cop, okay? And they're pretty much phasing him out. We've got two or three counties in New York State that does not have an elected sheriff. If you go down to New York City, you've got five counties and one sheriff to all five counties. And I don't even know if he is elected. One of the counties out on Long Island, I heard the sheriff is not elected. And there's another place in New York, I don't remember which county, which is appointed by the governor or somebody. Okay, so these guys aren't elected. So they're really trying to get rid of the sheriff. Well, we need to bring the sheriff back. I think the sheriff, and this is the committee men have to discuss this and educate ourselves on what's the proper process, and maybe Sheriff Mack can help us out on this. There are others I'm sure we can talk to. Maybe we need to move back to the sheriff, period, and the sheriff should control all of the police forces and take control of all of the cops within their counties. And we should do away with the town police and the city police. They should be under the sheriff's control. They're still
and the state
confused.
Troopers.
And the state troopers, yes. So we need to bring things back under the Constitution. Now, I don't know if that's the proper way. It does seem to be the proper way, but we have to go and explore to see which way our founding fathers intended it for it to be, what seems to make best logic to us. We need to talk to people who are educated in these areas, particularly you know, Sheriff Mack, and then we need to make a decision as committee men, and then we can force the legislators to do the will of the people, because if they don't, we're just going to recall them.
Mm.
That's simple. The judges get out of line, we're going to recall them. It's time when you walk into a courtroom, you need to be in a court of record. You need to be in a common law court. Unless you open up very specifically a nisi prius court, you open up an equity court, and that's what you're opening up, well, that's fine. But if you don't ask for it, automatically you should be in that common law side. And that's the way it should be. They should be, because right now they sandbag us. They defraud us. So the other thing is banks. I just want to bring this up real quick. I recently started looking into credit unions, and I never realized how great credit unions are. You know, I own that bank. I'm one of the owners. I'm a stockholder in that bank. And I don't pay the bank anything. They pay me. I don't pay a monthly fee. I don't pay for checks, nothing. And I get a few cents here or there, you know, from the bank. And all the service. Huh?
Beware of a banker giving gifts.
Yeah, well, the thing is that this is a credit union. It's owned by the people who put their money in the bank.
Yeah.
Get
a copy of their application for an account.
Yeah.
Get a copy.
Oh, I'm sure they deal with the banking laws and they screw us just like all the other banks because they don't have a choice. But once New York State becomes free, all of the elite banking systems, they're going to fall away. And it's the credit unions that could pick back up, and then the New York can give them their laws and their requirements, and they can be cut away. And they should be requiring silver. Yeah,
but the credit unions are indulging in fractional reserve banking.
I understand that, but we can do away with that. We have more control in banks that the people own, and we can do get the state legislation to control the banks properly. The point is we'll never control national banks. We'll never control elite-controlled banks, and we do need banks. So
well,
the credit unions are the place where we can work with.
We've got a state bank which is using federal statutes to run its business.
Well, yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah, the Tiger Ballot.
They're all under federal statutes, and we have to change that. My point is this. I don't have the complete solution on the bank, but it seems that that's where to start is with the credit unions. And the bank, and when the other banks move out of town because they won't abide to the rules and requirements that New York State will now put upon them that's required upon the state by the people, you know, we have to think this out. We have to talk with other people. We don't have the knowledge of it, but it's an idea.
John, doesn't the Articles of Freedom address money? Didn't Bob Schultz's Continental
Yeah, but on a federal level.
That was all hogwash.
Yeah, but it said that no state should accept any money as tender other than gold and silver as the Constitution. But now that requires a relationship between the federal government and the state government. We're not going to get that relationship. But the federal government, and in our past, we've already coined money. We've got lots of silver, lots of junk silver floating around out there. We've got lots of real nickels and real pennies and silver dimes and quarters and dollars. And that's what we need to get, okay? And New York, it'll gravitate to New York because New York is a major focus of business with the Empire State. And so lots of business is going to come here, and the banks are going to say, whoa, any money changing coming over this border has got to be turned to gold or silver, mostly silver. And we'll start to bring silver in. Other states will see that. They'll start doing the same thing. We want to be rich like New York too, you see? And we'll force the federal government to start coining silver dollars again. And we'll get off, and every time there's any funny money in New York, we're going to turn it right into silver, send it right back to Washington. We don't want any of that. But, you know, look, we got to be creative. I don't know that I have all the ideas. Nobody does. But it starts off with an idea, and then a bunch of people get together and discuss on how we can do it. We bring up the pros and the cons. We talk to some experts, and then we hand it over to the legislators, and we tell them make it work. And if they can't make it work, maybe they need to go home. We need to get other legislators because we need to make it work.
Ken.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch gears. You said none of the states are sovereign, but
right.
There are states that have signed sovereignty documents claiming reasserting their sovereignty.
Well, that's bullshit.
Okay, because they haven't completely made the
Well, you know what a taxpayer paying taxes is?
Yeah, I understand.
What is he?
A taxpayer paying taxes is a 14th Amendment citizen.
No, he's a subject, period.
Right.
Yeah,
he's
that's
a, well, that's
thing.
What a 14th
yeah.
Amendment citizen is. He's a subject. He's a slave.
Well, it doesn't matter. That taxpayer is a subject, and that
right.
taxpayer is the state of New York, pays FICA tax, the chapter.
Not anymore.
21.
Not when we take over. Not
yes,
when the committeemen require.
Yeah, but he's saying the states that have signed those sovereignty documents are not sovereign.
They're bullshit.
Because
well, maybe they're trying to do.
Step.
I think they're trying to do the best they can. Maybe at least some of the people in the state. Yeah, the enemy's there too, and at least it's a beginning. It's a nice start.
Well,
why don't we in New York make the example? Why don't we really become free and show everyone else how to do it?
Listen, the last thing they're going to give up on is the money. That's where they're going to fight the hardest. But they seem to be pushing this gun issue, and in a certain respect, I don't know why they want to go there, but that's the issue. That these states that sign sovereignty doctrines, they're going to be the first states to take up arms against this gun, this Second Amendment, because it's easy to understand and it's near and dear to people's hearts, and it's an emotional issue. People have been taught to be slaves. They've been taught not to think. But for some, you know, we grew up in America as a cowboy. You know, we have this gun thing in our blood, and they haven't been able to get it out. They expected us to be like England by now, and it's not happening. And that's why I think it perplexes me that they would push that issue, because the Second Amendment is going to be the powder keg. You know, if they're going to come after people's guns and the people are going to stick the guns out the window and start shooting, all that other sovereignty stuff is going to fall right into place, because they're going to say, listen, we don't want nothing to do with you, because that's going to be the trigger issue, the trigger point. Apparently, they believe that they'd rather have that trigger point sooner rather than later. So obviously, they think that they are prepared to control the people under martial law.
Who's signing the sovereignty doctrine, the documents?
Oh, I don't know. There's a site up on the internet. The strongest sovereignty documents that were signed is like New Hampshire. It almost sounds like they want a revolution.
Well, I'd like to say something here. I think what we need to think about and talk about is, what is New York going to do? Now,
yeah,
we do have people from other places. We have someone from Ohio and Pennsylvania, and we may have some other people from other places, and they need to ask themselves the same question. What are the people in your states going to do, and how can you do it? And I think what New York does, what we in New York have the opportunity to do very, very soon, okay, It once New York does it, every other state's going to demand it. And Ohio and Pennsylvania may be up on the upper end of that, because they're already listening and participating. And they, you know, I know a lot of people in Ohio and Pennsylvania is trying to take the Cleveland process back. Hopefully they're going to pick up on the judicial process. But the thing is this, what are we going to do in New York? We want to be sovereign. We want our state to be sovereign. And the state is sovereign as long as the people, as they obey the people. Because until they become obedient to the people, they cannot be sovereign. They'll be outside of their authority. Therefore, they cannot be sovereign. And theirs is eclipse sovereignty. In other words, they got to come back and for permission from the people. And unless they have a very specific order of what they can do and what they can't do, it's called the Constitution, then they can't do it. And we could take it away. It doesn't matter if it's in the Constitution. We can eliminate it. We could tell the legislators, change the Constitution to become this or that or the other thing. Yeah, there is a requirement and so on. Right now, our Constitution's in pretty good shape. We do have problems in it, and there's way too much in there maybe. But, you know, the thing is this, is what is New York going to do to become sovereign? First, the people have to be sovereign before the state could be sovereign. So it's time to step up, learn the Constitution, learn about the political process, learn the judicial process, start exercising it, become committeemen, get appointed until you become elected. Let's get involved. Let's straighten out our sheriffs. Let's straighten out our legislators. Let's straighten out our congressmen. Let's straighten out our U.S. senators. Let's straighten out our governor. Let's get them to start exercising things in a constitutional way. Let's get our sheriffs start organizing their counties, getting ready to protect them. Hey, our air is a mess. They got all these planes flying up there. They shouldn't be able to come into New York no more.
Well, I agree with that.
I was reading recently, and I'm pretty sure, and I'm going to confirm this by next week. I'm sure it was in the New York State Constitution where I saw that New York was to have a navy and an army. You know, we have a coastal front. We're supposed to have a navy. Maybe the New Yorker, you know, the ship New Yorker, maybe that used to be a state ship before it was turned over to the federal government. Maybe it's time to get a navy again. Maybe
well,
it's time to get an army again.
Here's,
we want to stay with the federal process, but first we have to take control.
One comment. One about the relates to the airspace. This is New York's airspace. We have ability to control it.
That's right.
And all this chemical shit that they're spraying up there can go somewhere else.
That's right. When they're told to stay out and they come in, they start spraying that stuff, and we know they're spraying it, I think it's time to send up a missile, and it's got to be done by the governor.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
We need some missile launches maybe. If that's what it's going to take, it's time to do what we got to do. Hey, Jersey, you know, we're with you guys, but, you know, you guys got to step it up, too, and Florida and Pennsylvania and Ohio. Come on, let's go. Let's stop these bastards. Look at all the poison, the genetically modified stuff in our foods.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do something about this. You know, the legislators might have to give these people 6 months or something to make the change, like Stop and Shop. And if they don't like it, move out. And some local businessman will buy the building and let's get doing what we got to do. And let's get some New York business will open up for all kinds of supplying of food. It'll be the first ones that are supplying huge amounts of food that isn't genetically modified and isn't pumped up with all this crap, these preservatives and antibiotics and all this stuff that's killing us, this high fructose corn syrup, putting all this fat on us and we can't get it off. We got to get rid of all that crap. And if it's 6 months, anybody being caught selling food in New York State with all of this crap in it, they got to go to jail, okay? You see, we have this is power. It's the committee men. They are the consentors of the Constitution. Once you understand that and we're elected, we get rid of the party bosses, we take control, and we now have control of our destiny,
right,
the way our founding fathers intended it. So it starts in New York.
And the family farmer comes back.
That's right. So we get manufacturing back into New York. We used to be one of the biggest manufacturers right here in New York State. We've lost it all to these bums.
Well, it starts with a B, but it's not bum.
Yes, I know.
Well,
and by the way, we're an hour and a half in this recording. Should we continue it for a little while longer?
No, we're probably at pretty much the exhaustion.
Yeah,
well, we could talk more. I just don't want too long a recording because I know people won't listen to a very long recording. So let's try to wrap the recording up in the next few minutes. I'll be quiet. Maybe other people can pipe into some of their thoughts about this.
Got things to say, but I'll wait in case somebody else wants to talk.
Anybody else want to pick up the mic?
I want to say a couple things real quick. Number one is up here in my county, we have a sheriff that I thought was an Oath Keeper. I know that he gets the Oath Keeper magazine. And I was very confident because he when they talked about doing forced vaccination, me and one of my neighbors were very concerned about that. So we called him up, and he came over to our house, and we said, "What are you going to do when they send a health worker around with two state troopers to vaccinate our children?" And I said, "Because I'm telling you right now, if that happens, that's my line in the sand. My gun's going out the door, out the window." And he said he was kind of nervous, but he said, "I will not enforce any unconstitutional edicts." And so I was happy with that. But here's what I found out since then. One of the things he complained about when he was over there, he said, "Listen," he said, the county legislator has the purse strings of his budget. And what they do is they cut the sheriff's budgets down. They don't fund them through the county very well. And so they end up going and begging for federal grants. Well, when you get these federal grants, you sign off your serenity, so to speak. They have the sheriff signing off his authority in a crisis to the next highest agency. I was also on the town board for 4 years, and the big push, and this was about 8 years ago, and they wanted us to go through this disasters NIMS SIMS training, and it's about bringing resources together. Now, on the lower end, it's smart and it makes sense, but ultimately, it's about handing off your authority in an emergency to the higher agency. And so ultimately, you end up with some federal guy coming in, grabbing your resources, moving them here and there. In other words, if we have resources here, they can take them and send them to New York City. If you've got a garden, they can come and take your food. That's ultimately what it's about. They don't tell you that, but when you sign those papers, and that's basically what it means. And they're all on it. All the towns are doing this. It's a requirement in New York State because there's monies that they won't get if they don't do it. Now, he said, he has a problem because he goes begging for federal grants. He's already signed these papers. These papers say that this is what he'll do. And so it's a problem. Well, one of the things that we talked about doing is We talked about doing a resolution in all the counties to force the legislators to fund the sheriff from the county money. Listen, they get county sales tax, and they can fund the sheriff and keep them funded without going to the federal government, especially if we only send up federal money. Now, this guy, we had a court case that was in family court that we got involved in, one of our peers, and the girl lied and made an order of protection, came in and they took his guns, and they didn't even have a signed warrant. It was all screwed up. We went and filled out paperwork, John, myself, with this guy, and we got him out of family court in 2 weeks, but there was a gun charge. When they went to his house, they found a rifle that was too short that he owned since his father gave him when he was 8 years old, and it was in a safe, and they found it. Anyway, it was a law. So he had a misdemeanor gun charge that they wouldn't drop. And the long and the short of it is, we found out that the warrant to get that gun was all screwed up. It wasn't done properly. It wasn't signed. There was no sworn affidavit.
Never.
It was never all illegal, all through the family court, and we made issue of that. We told them we were going to go to the federal court and blah blah. Eventually. It turns out that they've had other cases. The family court's been screwing everybody. And once they take your guns, they don't want to give them back. They tell you, sue us with an Article 78, which is a bunch of baloney.
Right.
Because that means if you do sue them, they are going to lose and they will pay. But what their policy is, that's their policy, which means they don't mind spending the taxpayers' money to pay damages because they understand that only a fraction of those people are going to sue. And they would rather not have to deal with giving the guns back because they're all afraid of liability. I assume. But anyway,
hey,
I think
SE Ohio, I guess that stands for Southeast Ohio, maybe. I think they want to speak. I had unmuted them, and they had a number two up, which I think is two and Q. But Southeast Ohio, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I have a question. I've not followed your case, from the beginning. But the more your conversation went on, the more I thought this might be a relevant question. How do you feel about the law that Alabama passed not long ago that basically is to block Agenda 21 in the state of Alabama?
Well, most of us liberty people here in New York understand that Agenda 21 is a New World Order thing, really. It's being pushed by the United Nations and funded by the United Nations, and I believe there's some kind of an equity relationship between these municipalities that are connecting into the Agenda 21. In any event, it has nothing to do with America and being free, so we definitely want to get rid of that. I think that's going to be an easy vote in the committee man process once the liberty-minded people take control to say no Agenda 21. And a lot of legislators know, with no uncertain turn, ban it in New York State. No municipality can deal with this. Just get rid of it. And it's done. Look, this is how easy it's going to be. There's nothing more difficult than what I just said. That's it. We're done. Just let's get together and do the real things. The liberty people know what has to be done. So let's just do it.
The sheriff,
so it's a pretty
argument.
Simple process. Go ahead.
The sheriff argument, Gerard, is very simple, and I think that can be pulled off without ringing a lot of heads, because the people that in that county can go to the county board and show them that they're paying that tax and point out that they can't pay that tax and in this state, because that is that makes them a subject. They
We're getting
did that
some bleeding back here, by the way, so people can maybe mute themselves. Go ahead.
If they did that, they'd have plenty of money to pay the sheriff.
Absolutely.
Well, my point was...
Yeah, you want to finish
sheriff,
up on this issue, and then we'll shut the recording off, because
yes.
It's getting long.
Here's my point. The point is here's a sheriff that claims to be an oath keeper, and when I got him out here in the car and said, listen, you didn't read the warrant, it's an illegal warrant, we're suing every sheriff that touched it, all his men, we create a lot of havoc over there. And he's going, I don't want any violence. Well, he is exercising illegal warrants through the family court. That's unconstitutional. Here's a guy that says he's not going to exercise any unconstitutional warrants, and he's exercising them through the family court. So, and I asked him, why didn't you read it? He said, I don't read that. I'm not a reader. And I said, how can you be a sheriff exercising warrants and you can't even look at it for a wet ink signature and this stuff? You shouldn't be sheriff then. Now, here's a guy that I thought was a good guy, and he's good by today's standard, but he's ignorant. He's going to go along with it because he doesn't have a backbone, I don't think.
That's our main problem.
And
okay,
he,
with that, I think I'm going to end the call because we're running too long. Are we ready to end the call? And we will continue talking. I just want to stop the recording.
Yeah, turn the recording off because it is.
Okay, we'll end the recording. Give me a second here.
Hey, John?
Yeah.
Are you going to be